Hey everyone, welcome to the Grabs Podcast, where we bring the stories of real life rescues to you firsthand from those involved. I'm Grant, I'm your host today, and with me I've got Steve Buchta. He's from Scott Township Fire and EMS in Indiana. He's going to talk to us about a grab made on October 30th, 2023. So, what's up, Steve? How you doing?
Great. Thanks for having me, man.
Yeah, for sure. So, tell us a little bit about yourself and your fire department.
So I joined the fire service in 2001 as a volunteer. I still volunteer to this day. Worked DMS for quite a few years after that. Finally decided to make this my profession in 2018 and joined a career department at Scott Township.
Nice. Tell us about Scott Township Fire Department. What's the culture like, or how many stations and whatnot?
So Scott Township is located in the northern end of Vandenberg County. We cover the north side of Evansville, Indiana. Roughly, Scott Township covers about 90 square miles, around 30,000 people. We run three stations. We're cross-trained. We run fire and EMS both. Full staff for us throughout the day is nine.
All the way around the clock, you always got nine there?
Yeah.
Nice.
24/7, nine people.
Nice. When you guys get a house fire, take us through what that looks like for you guys. Like, who's doing what, and what's the time between arrival of units and whatnot?
So on a first alarm box fire for us, in our district, you're going to get two engines, a ladder, one medic unit, and a duty officer, and then as well as some auto aid depending on the time of day and what they have going on.
And who's doing your guys' searches?
It varies on which apparatus arrives when. Typically, it's either the second or the third arriving truck.
All right. How are you guys teaching search within your organization?
We've got a really good training organization. I feel like our culture on the search side of things has gotten much better in the last 2 to 3 years. We're training on search a lot more than we used to. We're working on, you know, dirty drags and moving patients, and I feel like our culture on that has really advanced in the last few years.
Nice. Let's go to October 30th, 2023, and take us through this call.
Okay. So October 30th, call came in at 24 a.m. Came in for a mutual aid call for a fire department in the county north of us. So it wasn't actually our fire. They had called and requested us for manpower. So for us at the station I'm at, for a mutual aid fire like that, you're going to get a two-man engine and a duty officer captain that's going to respond to that. So the call came in at 124 as a working house fire. They requested manpower, and that's all they requested. That was all that was said. So woke us up, left the station. From dispatch to our arrival on scene was about 10 minutes. Just a little shade less than 10 minutes for us. Arrived on scene, we were the fifth apparatus on scene, I believe, at that point. The department that called us for manpower is a 100% volunteer department. So they rely on the department around them, but we don't work with them a whole lot because it's a different county than we are. Upon our arrival, arrived to find I'm going to say about a 900 square foot, single story residential type 5 construction, pretty heavily involved in fire. Had some master streams starting to flow, putting up a ladder. Looked like they were going to defensive attack from that point. So we arrived with our engine, our duty officer as well. So me, my engineer, and our captain in the chase vehicle. Our captain went up to command to get us an assignment. They said they were going defensive, putting up a master stream. really just wanted us to kind of help out with overhaul. So we didn't carry up a whole lot, just some pike poles or SCBAs, and kind of just prepared to go in and do some overhaul on the structure once they got the fire knocked down. So while we were staging to go in, we were kind of standing back on the CBC corner of the house on the exterior in the yard. They started setting up their master stream off the ladder and missed the house. And the master stream struck my engineer and kind of took him to the ground. In addition to that, kicked up a lot of mud, filled his base mask with mud, knocked out the nose cone of his SCBA mask, and took him to the ground. So we kind of picked him up, drug him out of the way, and started getting him cleaned up. So in the process of that, he said, I'm going to go back to the truck. I'm going to go grab a spare mask. And we said, okay. As he started walking back towards the truck, a neighbor had stopped me in the yard and asked me if the homeowner had gotten out. And I said, ma'am, honestly, I don't know. I just kind of got here. I don't know everything that's going on yet. I said, but I'll find out. I said, where does he sleep? And it's a 900 to 1,000 foot square home, so there's not a lot of space there. Come to find out, she said he sleeps in the basement, and that the house has a full basement underneath it. So I went over to command, my captain and I did, and asked them if they had performed a search and the house had been cleared. They said that they performed a search on the first floor and it was clear, but they had not been in the basement. At that time, the roof started to collapse and they were pulling crews out. So they ended their search with the main floor. I said, well, neighbor said that he lives in the basement basically, and we're going to go down and search. Command said, that's fine. Go for it. I'll get the master stream shut off. You guys go do a search. So talk to the original search crew that had gone in. They told us where they thought the basement door was to get down to it. There was no exterior entrance. It was one way in, one way out. So in order to get to the basement door, you have to come in the B side of the structure. There's a side door. Go straight into that. There's a door that is closed that goes straight into the basement. So we go in that side door, myself, my captain, and my engineer. We clear out some, get the door open, and get the door open, and we look down, and it's zero visibility. There's still some fire going on the main level. The roof had collapsed. So we decide we're going to go down and do a search. So the weird part about this is this is a county that we don't make a lot of fires to. We do mutual aid EMS wise. We don't do a lot of fire mutual aid with. So we don't have their communication channel or radios. So the three of us that came from Scott Township can talk to each other, but we have no way to talking to anyone else on scene or their dispatch center. So once we go down to the basement, we have no communication up or back out. So I go down first, my engineer follows me down, and our captain comes down last. You get down to the bottom of the basement steps. It's a home built in probably the 30s or 40s. It's a very narrow stairway, very steep steps. Get down to the bottom, and since they've been flowing the master stream, there's probably 3 to 4 inches of standing water in the concrete basement. Since we don't have any radio communication, my captain got the idea that he's going to stay at the bottom of the stairwell and stay in voice contact with us as we search. That way we have a lifeline back out, and that if we need to communicate anything, he can go back up the stairs to communicate that. At that point, my engineer, Kyle, and I split and do a split search in the basement. We have zero visibility. It is hot. It's holding a lot of heat from the fire above it. And we're in about 3 or 4 inches of standing water. Kyle goes one direction, I go the other, and we stay in voice contact as we're trying to occupy as much space in that basement as possible. As we're looking. We're down there, I'm going to say probably three and a half minutes. Staying in voice contact with each other as we're searching. And I get back to the BC corner of the basement. And I find a couch. I can feel the front part of a couch. I get my hands up on it, and I feel what feels like a rib cage. And as I get to feeling around, I find what appears to be our victim. He is wrapped up in a blanket, and it kind of appeared as if he had decided to shelter in place with where he was at. I started to unwrap him and get him untangled from the blanket he was wrapped up in. And I guess I wasn't paying attention or listening to Kyle at that point because I never heard him. But he was trying to yell for me and figure out where I was because at that point I hadn't made voice contact with him for a little bit because I was trying to get our victim untangled. I finally hear him. He asks me, "Hey, man, where you at?" I literally stand up and turn, and we are face to face. We're that close. There wasn't enough visibility that we realized we're that close to each other. I said, "Hey, I've got him. We just got to get him out." So Kyle goes, "Well, if you've got him, why are you talking to me?" So we get down, we get him untangled. I pull out my webbing, zero visibility, everything's wet. And as I just realized at that point, dragging out a real victim is nothing like dragging out a dummy in training. After messing with it for about 10, 15 seconds, I gave up, put the webbing back in my pocket. We decided to do a dirty drag out. Kyle got underneath his torso. I got his legs. And we yelled back to my captain to get a point of reference for the stairwell. He yells back. He stays in voice contact. He keeps telling us, "Just follow my voice. You'll get back to the stairs." So we end up dragging him back over. He probably weighed 180 to 200 pounds, somewhere in that range. Wasn't really heavy at all. Just difficult to move, extremely flaccid. Get back over to the stairs, get him set down at the bottom of the staircase. And the staircase is barely wide enough for one person. So we have to figure out how to get him up the stairs. So what we end up doing is my captain lays on his back on the with his SCBA, gets underneath our victim's armpits, kind of does like a bear hug with him, and drags him up one step at a time while we're pushing him from the bottom. Finally get to the top of the stairs. We're met by a group of firemen. They take him, move him out to the yard from there. They checked for a pulse. They couldn't find one. They immediately started CPR on him. Got through one round of CPR, stopped to do a pulse check, and they had a pulse. Got him moved over to the EMS cot. They moved him to the ambulance. They ended up RSI-ing him and transporting him to the hospital, where later he was flown to a burn center. What we learned later is he ended up succumbing to his injuries probably 5 days later, due to some flash pulmonary edema, probably due to the inhalation burns that he had. But he did make it to the ICU at the burn center for about 5 days after we got him out.
Was he slippery as you guys were moving him or no?
Extremely. I think it was a combination of sweat and being in the fact that we were running water downstairs from the master streams. So we had practiced kind of moving patients like covered in soap, but even that was nothing compared to what it was in real life.
I like how you guys did the one up top and then pushing from the bottom, almost like a Fowler's drill or something. You mentioned that webbing was your first choice. What training with the webbing had you done up to that point?
I mean, we've practiced trying to using webbing and tying knots and using drags with it, but in the situation we were in, it was not a feasible option. It was just quicker to grab it, or quicker to just grab him and go.
Yeah, I know that's
had it been a larger patient, I think the webbing would have been our only option. But with him only weighing about 200 pounds, it was a whole lot easier just to grab him and go.
Yeah, and for people that don't know, that area is pretty I know, I went to fire school first in Columbus, and that's what they taught us, do a girth hitch around underneath the arms, and it was webbing, 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 webbing. So that seems to be a Midwest thing. Sometimes it works, sometimes it doesn't work. After you guys got them out, when you got this done, like, how did you go back and address any gaps in your training?
So the biggest thing we found is, we've always used either hose dummies or the plastic dummies that are, missing half an arm or a head or a leg. And moving those patients around are a lot easier than the real ones. And even using each other as victims, because you still have some muscle tone. We learned that in a flaccid patient like that, there is no muscle tone. It's a whole lot harder to actually get a hold of.
Steve, you got any other takeaways before we wrap up?
What I found is the more space you can occupy, the better off you're going to be finding people. If you occupy, as much space as you can, eventually you're going to run into somebody.
Yeah, we're not looking for Easter eggs. It's a human being in a room. So cover that room. And kudos to
Correct.
you guys for
Yeah. I mean, spread out, occupy as much room as you can. You're going to run into somebody at some point.
Yeah, and kudos to you guys for taking intel from the neighbors and everything like that. That made all the difference.
Thank you.
Cool.
I appreciate you having me.
Yeah, no, I got some takeaways out of this. That's good. And again, the point of this is to try to bring firefighter rescue survey to life. We can't experience all the grabs and all the fires, but we can talk with others who have done it and learn from them what went right and what didn't go right, and then apply that in our fire that we got. And we ask everybody, if you get a grab, go to Firefighter Rescue Survey, fill out that survey. That information's for us, by us. And if you want to record your story, reach out to me, Nick Ledeen, or Justin McWilliams, and we'll get those recorded. Our goal is really to put one of these out about every 2 weeks. And that we just count on you guys to reach out and be willing to share the story. So until next time, get after it.